So, it's a little booklet called The Seven Main Aspects of God by Emmett Fox. And I have some handouts. I was on Emmett Fox just to give an idea of who he is and his origination as a New Thought person. Why did I choose? I actually had chosen, my initial book was Elegant Choices, Healing Choices by Marcia Sinitar. And for whatever reason, again, that book was out of print or wasn't able to be bought easily. And so I decided to change it and just talk on something that has been really a love and a curiosity at the same time. So I asked myself, and this is from since a little child, I would always hear about God. And when I ask about God, I would be told, God is in heaven. And so I used to look up a lot. I used to look up because I always knew that there was a masterful divine person up there, that up there mean up in heaven. And I was curious, where is God? What is God? Who is God? And that curiosity literally led me from one thing, one path to another. And I eventually became what you would call a born-again Christian. My mother was a born-again Christian, and so I was baptized in the Christian faith when I was in my teens. And that served me for quite some time because it fulfilled my need for maybe what is God. I didn't get that fullness about where is God. I did know that God was everywhere present, but I couldn't grasp the understanding of, okay, if God is everywhere present, why is this happening? Or, why do I feel this way? Or, I would always have questions and curiosity about God. So, on my path, my path led me to America. And I was still going to my aunt's church, which is another Baptist church. And it was good. I liked the music. I liked the energy in the church. And the pastor talked, beautiful, uplifting words. And again, that served me. And there is nothing in my past that would ever denounce where I have been, because it has absolutely made me the person I am today, with the strength. And I just want to be clear that I do honor my past and honor the places where I've been to be where I am today. However, after getting all that information and one day I remembered, while in church, I lifted up my hand, and the church is the type of church that praises God very loudly, and everybody would sing and hallelujah, praise God, and I was up there and I had my hands up in the air and I was really praising, and I felt something different, and I was very happy about what I felt. And then I went back the next Sunday, didn't feel it, but I did feel the sense of what I felt when I was praising God with my hands up in the air, and it felt so much deeper, so much more enriched. And that's where my quest took me, because I still had that feeling of, where is God? There must be something more to me, to this feeling that I got when I lifted up my hands and with praise. And so this it took me to many trips in the bookstore. I'm sure some of you have heard my my bookstore trips, you know. And the reason I've been going to the bookstores is only because I want to find something that's going to help me know a little bit more about me, about myself, about the curiosity that I have about God and about, you know, religious life, religious living. And so I bought many, many books as a result of just wanting to know more. And, you know, anything that had a paragraph or even a few lines of something that uplifted me, I would say it's well worth it. And I would have spent the money and buy the book and, you know, take a good look at it. Lorianne is shaking her head because she knows the hundreds of books I have, and it is just a testament of the places I've been to where I am right now. So I would tell you a little bit about the last time I've gone to the bookstore, and it's so strange. I have never had that yearning and that urge to go back to a bookstore to find a book. The last time I went to a bookstore, the bookstore was, it was late in the evening, it was a Sunday evening, and the bookstore was closing, and I couldn't find a book, and I was irritated and agitated, and I just want a book, let me see what this book is about. And so this book, it's a Science of Mind textbook. It's a huge book. I'll never ever buy a book like that in the bookstore, like just walk in and try to get a book like that, because it wasn't, you know, what I wanted. But I opened the book, and I came to a verse in on page 27, a paragraph, and I would read that paragraph. It says, "Nothing supernatural about the study of life." And I'm going to read it. It said, "Let us then approach the science of mind, the science of spiritual psychology." And that's the word, one of the words that got me, because I was a psychology and student. And I'm like, this is another aspect of psychology, spiritual psychology. So I would go, "And let us then approach the science of mind, the science of spiritual psychology, with awe, but not with fear, with truly a humble thought, but not with a sense that we are unworthy. Let us approach it normally, happily, willing to accept, glad to experiment, hoping and believing that as the results of our efforts, we shall each derive a great good, a sound understanding of the natural laws of life as they apply to the individual and to his relationship to the whole universal scheme of things. This is the simple meaning of true metaphysical teaching, the study of life and the nature of the law, governed and directed by thought, always conscious that we live in a spiritual universe, that God is in, through, and around, that God is in, through, around, and for us." And so I said, I'm going to buy this book with one intention, is going back the next night. It's going to go back to the store the next day, because it was a little bit beyond my budget, but I still went ahead and I bought it just to see what the book was going to say. And I never put that book down again. And that was 4 years ago. And the book has been an instrument in understanding more and more about God. So when I saw Emmett Fox's book, it was just another chance to be curious about what he has to say about God. And I'm just grateful for the path that I am on, and I acknowledge that I have not had that urge, because I think the urge has been satisfied by knowing, not particularly by Ernest Holmes alone, but by knowing, getting a bigger picture, a bigger awareness, and knowing of what God is in my life. So, Emmett Fox talks about us as children having a God-like image, and it fitted perfectly for me, because as children we remember what God is to us. God is in heaven. They made it very simple for us to understand. And like other things in our lives, they made them very, very simple. You know, watching sports, they try to explain things very simply for us. And anything a child could understand, it was put in a childlike way. However, as we continue to grow, we develop new skills of understanding, and we understand them, things of life, differently. And we get better understanding of how to explain life to ourselves and, you know, to our children. But one of the things that I've found is that we've never really gotten to the point where we grew up about God. You know, God really stayed in that infantile position for most of us, including me. Because, yes, I saw God as this big, great guy who was able to manipulate the entire world. And yet, there were questions. How could God be doing this in Asia? And then I'm way in Tobago, a little dot on the map in the scheme of things. How could God know what I'm doing, or how to come quickly to get me? So these kind of infantile thoughts kept moving around, and they were honest thoughts, even as an adult. But the understanding of what Emmett Fox interpreted for me was very useful. In my mind, I had God as a great and infinite being, but in my human limitations. So I had a humanness to God, a personalness that I applied or attached a human being form, even if it's not in the form of a man, but I saw him as human with all these, you know, divine powers. And what I understood that God to be was an anthropomorphic God, which means, you know, it's human form, and that's the form that I was thinking. I think I wrote down there, this much I wrote down as to the meaning of that.
Anthropomorphic.
I'm going to say that last time. It's the attribution of human motivation, characteristics or behavior to inanimate objects or natural phenomena. This is the number two meaning of the anthropomorphic God, which is having and or suggesting human form and appearance. And so, as of today, I just want to encourage each person to, and I know I'm preaching to the preachers here, but to think of God in a different way. And this is where Emmett Fox came up with seven main ways. He had mentioned that, you know, to look at one thing, you have to look at it in so many different aspects. You know, like he was talking about, you know, going to see the Capitol building. He said you can't see the Capitol building and make an assessment of it unless you really know different aspects of it and put all those aspects together. Yes, it's one building, but there's so many different parts that you can look for and evaluate and you know, come up with some with meaning about what the Capitol building is about. So this is what he's going to attempt to do. So the first main aspect of God is God as life. God is life. And life, he doesn't mean God is living, although we know God is living. It's God is life, the life that we are. The aspect of from the cradle to the grave, that's the life. The aspect of the life that the trees, the animals, the living aspect, the life that we are, that is absolutely what God is. And so it's about our existence. It's about our daily, everyday beingness as we exist. And this is what God is all about. You know, we kind of get tripped up and we talk about, so if God is life, you know, my body continues to get older, we deteriorate as time go on, and how could we say that that is God? Yes, our bodies are an aspect of God, and we're going to get into that a little bit later. But the true core, the true essence, the true presence, because if we are to determine what life is, if we all breathe in at one point and breathe out into our space here, I don't know, could you see it? I guess not. But it is the core of our being. It is the essence of our being. It is just what we are. It is just a known fact that it is God. It is the life of who we are. And so he also mentions that joy is one of the highest expressions of God as life. And so generally when you are living, truly experiencing life, joy is one of the byproducts of life. And with joy comes an expansiveness. You know, you just feel elevated. You feel very expanded. And that is what causes our positive attitudes in life. It's because of this joy that is within. And he went on to talk about the fact that you can see a difference when we are in a positive, joyful mode as opposed to being negative. Like saying the words, and I promise you this is the exact words he used, "Yes, I can." He said those words. And he said, if you look at the "yes, I can" and feel what your body feels like and feel the space where it comes from to say "yes, I can," and then think of "no, I can't." He said, think of how you feel when you use a words like that. You feel very restricted. You feel limited in your body feel and in your inner. And so being joyful is absolutely almost like a milestone for living life, for being God in our humanness. So he had so much more to say about life, but to think of God as life improves your health and gives you more energy. And so one of the things that Emmett Fox also did, or he's done, is to give like examples of what you can treat for as life. So, for example, he had mentioned that if you feel depressed, if you are anxious, if you feel that you have no will to move on, to go on, if you feel unhealthy, he says, treat for knowing that God is life in your life, that God is the existence of who you are. And if you treat, meaning if you pray for that awareness, that knowingness, that in no time you feel a lot better, you feel a lot healthier, and depression cannot exist for any period of time in a body that is filled with life. So he encourages us to pray, and pray knowing that God is life. And so I move on to the second main aspect. Thank God I wrote these aspects down. And the second one is God is truth. Not God is truthful. Our bodies, our lives, our daily experiences can be truthful. But God is truth itself. And he
He says, wherever there is truth, there is God. One of the things that I have grasped is that truth can never ever change. Our conditions about how we interpret truth can change, how our bodies can interpret or feel disoriented about what may be true at the time, that can change, but the truth, the aspect of God that is unchangeable, it literally says, this is who I am. And I have to just go back just a little bit. Emmett Fox also talked about trying to put God in a box, sort of. He says it's almost like walking into a room and trying to meet God or trying to find God there. And he says just the fact that we are thinking that we can do that.
Sorry, it's so hard.
That's okay. That's alright. He says, just trying to even think that we can put God in a box. Allison, you want to stay on the... Okay. That's fine. Just a moment for you to feel. Welcome. We're talking about God and the different aspects of God, and I've just finished the first one, which is God as life. But I kind of went back because I wanted to mention, you hear me talking about he and him, and I just wanted to clear that up a little bit. Emmett says that it is one of the most difficult things to put God into a category, as the Americans say. Put God into a category, and so we could only do our best with the thinking that we have and the limitations of our thinking, in terms of we are no longer looking at as God as that anthropomorphic God, but God as unlimited, God as expansive, God as not coming into a room and just finding God there, but finding God everywhere. And in order to do that, we have to have some name, some aspect of trying to attach that, our thinking, to what that type of God is. And most people, he says, find it easy to say he or him, knowing that there is an acute personalness to God, and that we could always refer to a he or him, or an it or she, or wherever you want to put it, because God cannot be labeled, God cannot be confined, there is just no terms for God, unless in your own mind you can find an alignment with it. So, so just to kind of give you an idea, if you feel that you want to say whatever you want to attach to God, just know that it's not a human, physical type of God, but it's a God that is everywhere present. It's God who knows and is able to understand every grain of sand. It's the God who can know every microbe, every bacteria, everything in this earth. And this is the other reason I always thought about, how could God know the finest, most minute details? But it's a God that is absolutely everywhere present. In everything, God is there 100%, and it's mind-boggling. So if you have questions about that, we can talk about it later. All right, so God is truth, and we know that, and so what we hold true as God cannot change. However, our circumstances may change,
our lives may kind of give a kind of twist and turn, and so we kind of have a belief or a false belief about what is happening, and we take that as truth. But just know that the truth that is God is unchangeable, absolute truth. So we go on to our third aspect of God, which is God as love. And again, it's not God is loving, but God is love. Just as God is truth and God is life, we as human beings are loving. And so this is an aspect, a niche, an aspect that we can portray God as in our loving qualities and in our interactions on a daily basis with our fellow men and with the animals and with nature and you know, with however we see best to portray our love. So this is a very important aspect of God in our everyday practice. Just remembering God as love. And some people have different ways of interpreting love. And of course, you know, love causes no harm. Love is not puffed up. 1 Corinthians 13 would tell us a lot about love and how to be loving. So just remembering God as love is a very, very important aspect of our daily living. God is love, and God is the only power. So if God is love and God is the only power, then love is the only power. And to think of God as love makes you more loving, and that gets rid of a certain amount of criticism and resentment that we may have in our everyday lives. So, I had my little break point here, and we can probably stop and take a break, or maybe I can go one more and do the fourth aspect, and then we'll do the other three aspects after. So, the fifth aspect, the fourth aspect of God is God as intelligence. And God is not merely intelligent, but intelligence itself. So, Emmett Fox had asked us to think of any condition that we may be experiencing in life. For example, any student who may be having a hard time trying to understand or to remember their schoolwork. Emmett says, just think of God as intelligence, because in thinking of God, and this is another aspect he had mentioned, the only way we can truly know and understand as much as we can understand is by thinking about God. Because as we would talk about, God is the one mind. And if it's the one mind, whatever our thoughts are on that level, it's the level of reaching and understanding what God is. So when we think about God, we literally align with God and with the qualities of God. So when we think about God, it's almost like a prayer. It's almost like an aligning, a connection, a oneness, a unity with God. And so we can pray for students who think that, you know, they don't have a good time remembering, and just know that they are intelligence. Just as they are life, and life is God, they are intelligence, and they are God. And so it's God understanding, opening up, and flowing through them. He also mentioned that if we may have any problems with understanding documents or contracts or understanding anything that really befuddles us, he says to stop, breathe, think about God as intelligence, as me, flowing through me. And take that quiet time, and he says, in no time you either understand, someone comes to explain it in an easier, more understanding way, or you get intuitive as to where to go get the answers. And so he says, always remember to put yourself as the aspect of God. So if you're feeling ill, you put yourself as the aspect of life and you pray knowing that you are life. If you're feeling doubtful about stuff, you put yourself as truth, and so forth, so forth. Alright? And so, again, he said, think of the condition you are experiencing, then think of the aspect of God that is the exact opposite. So if you're feeling angry, or if you're feeling fearful, what condition would you think of? What aspect of God would you think of to counteract this? What would you think of God as, if you're feeling fearful, what condition would you remember God to be in your life?
Fear itself. Strong, powerful.
Powerful. What?
All-encompassing.
Yes, all-encompassing. And so, the aspect, so if you're feeling dumb or foolish or not having all the answers, think of God as intelligence in your life. If you're sick, think of God as life. If you're feeling fearful or angry, you think of God as love, etc., etc. So the key to it is always bring the aspect of God that would contradict the feeling that you're having. So I need to have a lot of guidance in my life for so many different things, I think of God as intelligence, because knowing that I am intelligent and intelligence flows through me to the other areas of my life, then that's a direct contradiction to what I'm feeling as if I'm not guided, or if I do need other areas in, or if I need any other thing to be interpreted for me. So don't forget to use these beautiful qualities, because they are all qualities of God. And we're going to come back and do the last three after our break, and probably come up with something to do as an interactive group. So thank you so much. Wonderful. Thank you very much, Lorianne. You were awesome. Mm-hmm. Nice voice. All right, so we come to the fifth aspect of God. And I've never seen God described as soul, but Emmett Fox said God is soul. And the way he used soul is not the soul of, what we call our psyche, that type of thing. It's God as the individuation. He says, we are a unique individuation of God. And so the aspect of soul is the one to realize when you are called upon to perform some task or undertake some responsibility that seemed too great for you. So in other words, just to understand that it is all one. It's all God. Every aspect of our life is God, as David and I were talking. I mean, God is in everything, and everything is characterized as. However, he mentioned that some aspects, the human being, which is almost the highest form of God individualization, has choices. And this is one of the main things that separate us from, let's say, some animals and some obviously inanimate objects. it can separate us from, even though they're beautiful and lovely, from flowers, because they are just in their nature. We are all in our nature. However, it is the nature of the plant to grow, to be open to all the sunshine and all the, you know, the photosynthesis process and all that. And it grows into a beautiful flower. And then we admire it, we appreciate all the beauty of it. However, it goes through its entire process, its entire nature, and then it goes back to where it came from. It goes back to dying and a reprocessing, if I should use that word, a regeneration of its own. The human being, although we are absolutely nature and natural, and it's absolutely what God is, we have a choice. As opposed to the flower, we can choose to bloom, or we can choose to... I'm not. Or we can choose to work magic.
That was great.
Or we can choose to just to ignore the wonderful magic that we have inside and just be your usual, you know, Darby self, you know. We have a choice. And this is one of the neatest feature of God and I are one. Because the qualities that God is, I can't say God, I don't think that is good English, right? Anyhow, the qualities of God is exactly what the qualities of man is. It's absolutely the same. And it's the same with the flowers and everything else, but as I explained earlier. And so, as an individuation of God, we are in a powerful, powerful, powerful situation to really choose the life that best suit us. And just knowing that information, it's an awesome partnership with God. Because, yeah, we are exposed to God and I are one. God, obviously, God can never be separated. God is inseparable from us. God is inseparable from everything that is in existence. But the truth of it is, if we can literally think and zero in and focus on the inseparation, or the inseparation, or the fact that we are absolutely and never ever disconnected to God, and just use that knowledge, that understanding for so many things in our lives, knowing that if I want to go and to be a better person on my job, for example, I just know that I am intelligent. I just know the truth that I am perfect just the way I am. I just know that I and God are one, and God is awesome intelligence. God is awesome, whatever it is. And so I attach myself in my mind, because I'm already inseparable. But I have to choose to remember that God is God and I are one. And so knowing that I am an individual, yet being a part of, I'm separate, yet I am together. And that is a powerful, that's powerful information for us to remember. That God flows in us, through us, around us, and as us. And knowing that is a wonderful way to keep our communication, our connection in integrity with who we truly are. So, just take God on as a partner if you want to look at it in a very human form. Just remember that God is your partner in every everything you do, every single aspect of your life, remember God as God and I are one, and think of the beautiful qualities that emanate as a result of God. So that's a praise form. There was so much in God as soul, but this is a praise form of it. The next one is God as God is spirit, and again, it's, we talked about our body being spiritual, but our core is spirit, and I think that is a little different in remembering who we truly are. It's the life, it's the intelligence, it's the truth, it's the total individuation of God, but it is here in our core. It is our being. It is the truth of our existence. However, our bodies and our outer conditions are spiritual. You know, I remember one of the things that really, at the time, I really got upset is when a dear friend, you know, had to literally fight for her existence in a church, sort of. And one of the reasons that was put out is that she was not spiritual enough, and that always bothered me to hear that you know, leaders of places would say that a person is not spiritual. A person is always spiritual. Everything on this earth is spiritual, because it's infused, it is the Spirit of God everywhere present. And so if it's God as spirit, then the conditions would absolutely be spiritual. So you are always spiritual. Now, there's a difference with spiritual and religiousness, obviously, and this is where I think a lot of people get confused as to where they stand in a God-like atmosphere. But just remember, you and God are one. So if you and God are one, then you are spirit. However, your human manifestations would put you into a different realm of spiritual. And in that sense, still, you know, it is something that we are absolutely proud about, because it is God emanating. We remember that spirit can never ever die. Spirit was never born, actually. And so if spirit was never born, then spirit has always been in existence. And that is another powerful truth that we remember, that our true selves, who we are, has never been born. We were always existing. We are. I am. God is. And that's the truth of our being. And so our bodies can depreciate and deteriorate and die, and that's the spiritual aspect. It's like, you know, I have been seeing a candle burning and the wax falling off over the last week, and now I understand that candle, that flame that is burning, is my truth. That is my Godness, my spirit. That is my eternal flame that I call God within. And the wax that's coming off is literally the spiritual, the human, the part of me that, you know, as nature of anything, that's part of my nature, is the nature of the candle to burn and to roll down the sides of the candle. Likewise, it's my nature, the human nature, to depreciate and to fade slowly into existence. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to that I'm not going to take care of myself or do the things that would really help me to live a very loving and fulfilled and healthy life. Anything that I can do to have my human form healthy would be absolutely an asset. But
I just know that it's in true human form, in human nature, it will slowly depreciate and go back to the dust from which it came. Alright, so this is spirit, and we are all spirit, and we are all eternal, we are all divine. Spirit never changes, and that is a truth that we hold on to. Spirit can never change. It is our true, eternal, divine nature. And so I am not a spiritual idea like inanimate objects. And this is one of the things we teach in Foundations class, is about spiritual idea. And this is, it kind of has a different aspect to it, because like David and I were talking, you know, yes, all is God. And as I mentioned, the human being, we do have choices. I'm sure some pets have choices, but I don't know the level of, you know, the choice mechanism. But there are things that we call God, as a cup, the phone, the books, you know, the clothes we wear. And this is what we look at as in a little different scenario, as the spiritual aspect of God. It is God because it comes from the one mind, but it has had an idea, an origination at one point, and so as a result of the origination, it grew into different inanimate objects, in different things that our minds, you know, set about to build upon. You know, there was this one big bright idea, and as a result of that, it just went and, you know, expanded. So a lot of the times, inanimate objects, things that we hold dear, Emmett has not called that an individuation of God. He called that a spiritual idea of God. And he calls the individuation of God the human nature, the character. I guess some animals, I'm not sure. So please forgive me if I really don't know the answers to that. He also, and the other thing about it is that in any event, nothing is ever lost. We are all in this one big picture. It's just one absolute oneness. And so even if there is disintegration and integration and disintegration, it always goes back into our oneness. It's a constant evolution. It's a constant revolving. It's a constant cause and effect. It's constant change. There was a really neat quote that you would say sometimes about the integration process. Nothing.
It's from Anatomy of Healing Prayer. Ernest said, "There is nothing to be integrated, reintegrated, or disintegrated. There is only that to be revealed which has always been whole."
Thank you. Mm-hmm. There is only that to be revealed which has always been whole. And so there is absolutely no divisions. There is nothing in separate about the oneness. Thank you so much. That was very helpful. And the very last principle is God. The aspect of God is principle. And, you know, these are things that I never thought he can put God into categories like. But one of the main things he said about God is principle is that God is the principle of perfect harmony. And God does not change. So perfect harmony is the nature of his creation. And, you know, we look about in a universe that, and sometimes we can see, and of course this is our clouded picture of looking out from our wholeness through a glass that might be clouded or distorted, and we see imperfection. It could be from disbelief, as we have choices, and we see cruelty, we see evil, we see sin, we see all the stuff out there. But does that change the truth that is God, that it is all in perfect harmony, it doesn't change that truth. The truth is we are absolutely whole. There is nothing to be disintegrated or reintegrated into our wholeness. There is nothing to be done. We are absolutely perfectly in harmony. And if you think of harmony, you think of wholeness. There's nothing to change about wholeness. Wholeness will always equal wholeness. And so this is one thing we have to remember. Even in the presence of what looks like disharmony, that has its place. It is perfect harmony. We probably just don't understand it to be harmony at the time because of our colored glass or of what we are looking through, the filters we are looking at it at. But there can never ever be disharmony in this oneness we call God. It is always in perfect harmony, regardless of where we are, what we observe, and what our interpretations are to it. And it's a good feeling to remember. It's like hot bread and butter kind of feeling to remember that it's always in perfect harmony, no matter the conditions, no matter how it looks. God is always whole. And we, because God is whole, remember God is life and God is truth, and therefore we are life and we are whole. And there is nothing to be added or subtracted from us. We are just living God on a daily basis, alright? So, God is principle, the principle of perfect harmony, and therefore perfect harmony is the law of our being. And so these are the seven aspects of God, which, thanks for your indulgence. I am really grateful to you all for me expressing them. And I'll just mention again, the first one is God is life, and it's our life. The second is God is truth, and it's the basic truth that we live by. Whether we live by it or not in a human form does not change the fact that God is truth. God is love. God is love itself. God is love emanating as us. So absolutely we are loving. We are carefree. We are free. We are kind and patient to our human folks. And in the presence of love, there is no fear. So if we want to eliminate fear from our lives, we just remember that we are absolutely loving people, and God is the presence of love in my life. And then God is intelligence. Not only intelligent, we as human beings are intelligent because of who we are. We are intelligence, which is God, and intelligence is universal. So anything we need to know, we already know it. We just open and tap those resources. Just get into alignment and ask and pray. I've left the card that Emmett Fox, I'm sorry, it's not a card. It's a card that I downloaded from eBay. I went looking for it last night. It was not on any of the his internet books. So it just showed up in eBay. And I did ask for wisdom and for the intelligence. I said, how can I get this card that Emmett Fox talks about, his card of divine love? It's a prayer that he prays, and he advises us to pray and use that as often as possible. And so I said, I want to share this with the group. And voila, eBay. And usually you cannot take things off and, I mean, copy, because sometimes they put it in a program where it's not allowing you to do the copy. And it showed that I wasn't getting the copy, but when I put it on Word, it showed up on Word.
Awesome.
So I'm like, okay. Yeah. And so he advises that to use that prayer often. Change the love to any aspect of God that you want incorporated in your life.
So if you want intelligence, and he says use about three of them at a time. Intelligence, principle, I am God, are one. Whatever you want and feel at the time, put a few of them together in that prayer and just substitute them or add on to love. And he says it's a very, very powerful prayer that has been, and I understand has been in existence since he's written the book, which is like, I think it's 41 or something like that. I can't remember. Please don't quote me. And then God is soul, individuation, God is spirit, and God is principle. I thank you very much for your indulgence.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks again. Yay.